Brother Hutto, ladies and gentlemen, or better call you brothers and sisters, before I begin, may I make just a few comments to my brother Hutto, because I hope he will forgive me if I refer to many verses in the New and Old Testament. I say this with complete reverence to all pure scripture, wherever I can find it, in my search for God's truth. The gospel of Jesus is such a highly valued matter that as a Muslim, I shall spare no effort in trying to learn of it and absorb its divine revelations. The available Old and New Testaments, historically inadequate as they may be, they still could be searched for God's truth. God has his own way of preserving his truth. Our subject tonight is the advent of the Prophet Muhammad in the Bible. And when I refer to the Bible here, of course, I'm referring to both Old and New Testaments. Let's give a brief background to the predictions contained in the Bible. As we all know, about 4,000 years ago, a child later known as Abraham was born. He had a wife called Sarah, who had an Egyptian maid called Hagar. Abraham took Hagar as a second wife at the express request of Sarah for the purpose of raising an heir to him of his own flesh, as stated in Genesis chapter 15 verse 4 and in chapter 16 verses 1 to 4 and also in verses 10, 11 and 15 of chapter 16. Abraham had his first child by Hagar and he called him Ishmael. In Arabic we call him Ismail. With Abraham and his son Ismail, God made a covenant of blessing the world through them, as we can see from Genesis 15 verses 13 and 18 and in chapter 17 verses 7 to 14. Later, Abraham had his second son by his first wife Sarah. God then renewed his promise to Abraham so as to include Isaac within the covenant. This is recorded in Genesis 17, verses 15 to 19. From these two sons of Abraham, two great nations have sprung up. The Ishmaelites, now known as the Arabs, and the Israelites, now known as the Jews. And this was done in fulfillment of the promises made to their father and through him to them, as recorded in the Old Testament. You are all familiar with this. Therefore, the Ishmaelites and the Israelites are the brethren, the one of the other. And in addressing the whole of any one of these two nations, a reference to their brethren is obviously a reference to members of the other nation. Now, a certain amount of favoritism shown to the Israelite line at the expense of the Ishmaelites is recorded in some passages, namely Genesis 17 verse 21 and chapter 21 verses 10 and 12. However, this favoritism shown to the Israelites is indeed of their own making. There is the obvious self-contradiction between Genesis chapter 17 verse 21 and Genesis chapter 21 verses 10 and 12 and chapter 21 verse 13 and chapter 22 verse 18 and Deuteronomy chapter 21 verses 15 to 17. Moreover, the view is now established The Genesis is the work of an unknown editor who had access to documents containing the traditions and early records of the Hebrew people. Who welded them together into a whole? Nevertheless, let us examine this aspect of the so-called Jewish nationhood. The concept of the chosen people caused the Hebrews to think that birth, not obedience, was the prominent thing, even though the Torah of the Old Testament states that Israel's favored position depended on their keeping the covenant, that is, observing God's law, which was given to them. In Deuteronomy 28, verses 63 to 67, we can read about this. The prophetical books detail that the Jews consistently disobeyed the law and broke the covenant, with the result that they lost their favored status and were left by God to suffer very grave persecutions and destruction of their nationhood. But a clear doctrine of chauvinism has been developed by some Old Testament writers, even to attempting to prove that God's blessings can come to the world only through the descendants of Abraham's son Isaac, that is, the Jews. As we noted, the contradictions in the book of Genesis. In chapter 17, verses 7 and 8, God declares that his covenant would be with Abraham and Abraham's descendants, and that God would give Abraham and his descendants the land of Canaan or Palestine. The Old Testament records in Genesis 17, verse 20, that Ishmael, the first son of Abraham, was the father of 12 princes, one of whom was Kedar. In Hebrew, it is referred to as Kedar. Now, this Kedar is the ancestor of the Prophet Muhammad. Ishmael is generally regarded as the father of some Arabian tribes with the descendants of Abraham by a concubine called Keturah. This is in the Bible. And these were the ancestors of certain other Arabian tribes, as recorded in Genesis 25, verses 13, and in 1 Chronicles chapter 1, verse 29 and 32. The Old Testament further records that God promised to make a great nation of Ishmael's descendants. We can read that again in Genesis 21, verses 13 and 18. But this promise was not fulfilled until the coming of the Prophet Muhammad, for only then did the Arabs rise from obscurity to become a great nation. This is history. We all know it. But here is the point. According to the Torah, even as it exists today, God's covenant with Abraham included not merely the Jews as descendants of Isaac, the second son, but also the Arabs as descendants of Abraham's first son Ishmael. But this did not suit the chosen nation theory, which was developed by later editors of the Old Testament. So they added other verses to the Old Testament which attempt, in contradiction, to resist the blessings of God's covenant to the Jews only. The Old Testament book of Isaiah goes even further. It contains the description of the holy prophet, which is quoted in Hadith by Bukhari, and I have a Hebrew translation which actually foretells the coming of the Arab prophet. I shall read for you the translation that I have, since I do not read Hebrew myself. It is Isaiah chapter 42, and I read, "Behold my servant, whom I uphold, mine elect, in whom my soul delighteth. I have put my spirit upon him. He shall make the right to go forth to the nations. He shall not cry nor lift up, nor cause his voice to be heard in the street. A bruised reed shall he not break, and the dimly burning wick shall he not quench. He shall make the right to go forth according to the truth. He shall not fail nor be crushed till he have set the right in the earth, and the isles shall wait for his teaching. Thus said God the Lord, He that created the heavens and stretched them forth, He that spread forth the earth and that which cometh out of it, He that giveth breath unto the people upon it, and spirit to them that walk therein. Then we go on to verse 8. The Lord hath called thee in righteousness, and hath taken hold of thy hand, and kept thee and set thee for a covenant of the people, for a light of the nations. And we go on to verse 11, and it says, Let the wilderness and the cities thereof lift up their voices, the villages that Kedar doth inhabit. Let the inhabitants of Selah exult, let them shout from the top of the mountains. Note that in Isaiah, this chapter, chapter 42, the servant of the Lord is referred to as the elect or chosen one. In Arabic, that means Mustafa. When you compare the Hebrew, which means the elect, we have no doubt that it is Mustafa. We know the translation is Mustafa in Arabic. We also know that Mustafa is the name of the Prophet Muhammad. Unlike the Jewish prophets, which were sent to Israel only, this prophet would be universal. He would be for the enlightenment of all the people and all the nations, as we have read in Isaiah chapter 42, verses 1, 4, and 6. Further, in verse 11, he is identified specifically with Kedar and Selah. Kedar, or Kedar, was one of Ishmael's sons and an ancestor of Muhammad, peace be upon him. And Selah was the name of an Arabian city. Many other verses in the Bible positively identify Kedar with Arabs and the Arab people. Isaiah 21, verse 13 to 17 speaks of Arabia, the glory of Kedar. Ezekiel 27, verse 21 mentions Arabia with its princes of Kedar. It is significant that Isaiah identifies the universal prophet, both by nation, namely Arab, and tribal descent, namely Kedar, whose descendants are the tribe of Quraysh that lived in Mecca, from whom Muhammad came, so that he would be marked out as distinct from all the previous Hebrew prophets. Let's now talk about the authorship of Genesis. Until recently, Genesis, like the rest of the Pentateuch, was regarded as the work of Moses. The tradition, however, did not arise until a comparatively late period. And in the absence of corroboration, its evidence cannot be regarded as conclusive. The book itself is anonymous and contains nothing to suggest a Mosaic authorship. On the contrary, it bears traces of having been put together in its present form many years after the death of the great Hebrew patriarch. It was put together when Canaanite was no longer in the land, as recorded in Genesis 12, verse 6. And the Jewish monarchy indeed had been established. We read that in Genesis 36, verse 31. So the dates assigned to the parts of which it is supposed to be composed, as well as to the recasting of them in their present form, are all embraced within the age of prophetic activity in Israel. Also, the Pentateuch reveals many features inconsistent with the traditional view that in its present form it is the work of Moses. For instance, it may be safely granted that Moses did not actually write the account of his own death as recorded in Deuteronomy 34. In the early persecutions of the Christians under the Roman emperors, the most strenuous attempts have been made to stamp out Christianity by destroying its literature, which included both Old and New Testaments. The result is that the oldest part of the Hebrew Bible now in existence is a section of the prophetical books made in the year 916 AD, while the oldest complete manuscript of a whole Bible belongs to the 11th century AD, and we have very few manuscripts to guide us as to the readings of various texts. At this stage, I believe I might quote for you the passages from the Bible referring to the covenants so that we refresh our memories. I know most of you know them, but it's very significant at this stage to realize how they sound like and what they say. Genesis 12, verses 1 to 3. And I will make thee a great nation, and I will bless thee and make thy name great, and thou shalt be a blessing, and in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Genesis 15, verse 18. In the same day the Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, unto thy seed have I given this land from the river of Egypt unto the great river, the river Euphrates. Genesis 16, verses 10 to 11. This is my covenant, which ye shall keep between me and you and thy seed after thee. Every man, child, among you shall be circumcised, and it shall be a token of the covenant betwixt me and you. Genesis 17, verse 7, and I will establish my covenant between me and thee and thy seed after thee in their generations for an everlasting covenant to be a God unto thee and to thy seed after thee. Genesis 17, verses 13 and 26, and my covenant shall be in your flesh for an everlasting covenant. In the selfsame day was Abraham circumcised and Ishmael his son. Genesis 17, verse 21, but my covenant will I establish with Isaac, which Sarah shall bear unto thee at this time in the next year. Let us remember this verse, very important. There is the contradiction. After having included Ishmael with Isaac in the covenant, then we have a verse here that shows favoritism to the Israelite line, an indication that an interpolation is there. Genesis 21, verses 10 and 12, wherefore she said unto Abraham, get out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, even with Isaac. And God said unto Abraham, let it not be grievous in thy sight because of the lad, and because of thy bondwoman, in all that Sarah hath said unto thee, hearken unto her voice, for in Isaac shall thy seed be called. There is another one. But in Genesis 21 verse 13, and it says, and also of the son of the bondwoman will I make a nation, because he is thy seed. Now we have Genesis 22, verse 18, and it says, and in thy seed shall all nations of the earth be blessed, because thou hast obeyed my voice. From the preceding passages, we can see that Ishmael was of the seed of Abraham, no less than Isaac, and as such, equally entitled to possess the promised land everlastingly. and to be of those in whom all the nations of the earth shall be blessed, as recorded in Genesis 22, verse 18. But this blessing is subject to the condition that he obeyed the voice of God, as did his father Abraham. Now, as to the promised lands having passed into the possession of the Ishmaelites, namely the Arabs, there is no dispute. That is a historical fact. A fulfillment of these prophecies is a historical fact. What is denied is their sharing in the spiritual benefit on the basis of what is stated in Genesis 17, 21, verse 21, and in chapter 21, verses 10 and 12. In the light of what is stated in Genesis 17 and in Deuteronomy chapter 17 verses 15 to 17, the statements in Genesis 17, 21 and 21 verses 10, I'm talking chapter 17 verse 21 and in chapter 21 verses 10 and 12, are either interpolations or mistakes of the copyists. There can be no other explanation. Spiritual benefit is the fruit of obedience to God's commandments and of the righteousness. Spiritual kinship to Abraham through a faith like his, like Abraham's, determine whether we are heirs to the promise made to him by God or not. Abraham's seed is not lineal descent, but his spiritual descent. Thank you, sir.